Continuing now on Connections, I'm Rick Moore, and my special guest is Barbara Vance, who is, let me see exactly what her title has. I'm not sure it still is. Barbara, what is your title? Because you're still listed on the SETI Institute website as the Operations Manager of Big Picture Science.
That's correct.
All right.
That is my title with the radio show, yes.
Okay, well, I got to get into that because this is absolutely fascinating on how technology works and all this. But first of all, whenever we have someone new on our program, we like to find out a little bit more about them personally rather than on the internet. Give us a little idea of your background, maybe your education, and how you got to where you are.
Well, it's like the Beatles. It's a long, or the Grateful Dead, I guess. It's a long, strange road. I'm actually a librarian, so I went to library school. I have my master's in library science, and I worked in a library for 26 years. Started as a page and worked all the way up through being the automation librarian, which means that I installed the library automation system when, you know, card catalogs went out and computers came in. And then I maintained those systems and other computer systems at the library for some years. And then I got tired of doing that. So I went to a startup company right before the dot-com crash. So you have to realize that this was, you know, back in the 90s, which may be old history for
some of the kids, yeah, for sure. But not for us.
Yes, I mean, they probably don't know what a card catalog is, for example. But that company was actually, since this was pre-Google, hard as that may be to believe, they were trying to write searches to read news feeds for specific industries. So sort of like doing Google searches before there was Google. Mm-hmm. And the dot-com crash hit, and it went under, and I jumped over to the library automation company that I had installed at my library, and I was the circulation product manager there for 3 years until I started volunteering at the SETI Institute in Mountain View, California. And they basically wrote a job for me in the fundraising department to be a researcher for them. And so I left the job at the library automation company and started working at the SETI Institute. And that's how I got to work there. And that's how I met the people doing the radio show. I had met Seth at a class before that, but that's where I got to meet Molly, and when we brought in Gary, you know, our other producer and, mm-hmm. you know, master of voices, I just started helping them out because they're focused on doing the interviews, putting the audio together, and then I was doing the getting it out to all of the stations and the distribution.
All right. We'll get to those guys in a minute. I want to know more about your thing. So where were you working primarily when you were doing library? And then when you went to the automation, where were you?
Well, I'm a California girl, so I went to San Jose State for both my undergraduate and graduate degrees. And then I was working at a city library in Santa Clara, California.
Mm-hmm.
Where I did all of my library work. And then the library automation company is in Emeryville, California, which is by Berkeley, up in the East Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went to the SETI Institute, that's in Mountain View, which is down closer to San Jose.
Yeah, I hope to visit someday. But I tell you, well, now when you went from library to automation, obviously with technology, how did you learn the technology yourself? Was it all just following software, or did you have to learn systems and so on?
Well, I some of it was going out and looking at what systems were out there when we were looking at what library system to implement, because there still are several. Different varieties.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had a committee and we went and looked at various systems. But I also, since I knew, we knew that this was coming because, as you may recall, Apple was putting Apple IIe computers in schools, which was a very smart move on their part. So kids were starting to learn about computers even back in the early 90s because of these computers that Apple put in. So we had those, you know, kind of small brain dead computers in our library.
Uh-huh.
And we could just see that this was coming. And so I sort of had an aptitude for that. And so it was sort of known that I was going to be the one that would be running the system when we got it, which, of course, you got trained by the company on how to use it and so mm-hmm. forth. But then I also, on my own, started taking some network administration classes from University of California, Santa Cruz Extension, which was actually located in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. which is, of course, where I was working. So I actually got a certificate in network management on my own.
Wow.
Learned this because I knew that it was going to become important to know about, you know, what is a server and, you know, how does the net actually work. And I was going to have to be repairing computers and hooking them up and doing all that. So I wanted to have a background.
You know, my aptitude.
I was doing.
my aptitude for this stuff was such that. And I want to ask about library science in a second, but was when the smartphone came along, I remember saying to my wife, who in God's name wants a phone with a camera in it? Nobody's going to buy that. So I got a lot of foresight too, as you can imagine. But
I can top that because I went to a seminar about this thing called a facsimile machine.
Yep.
And it was so that's how old I am, and it was like. Well, it's kind of interesting, but I don't see how we would use it in the library. And of course, that was totally off base.
Exactly. So. Well, you know, as a math teacher, I used to marvel at I do marvel at the change in how at least school libraries are operated. In that, the emphasis now is so much more on technology than it is on hardcover. And of course, you and I remember combing through college libraries, having to go up through the stacks as they were known then. And climb up, go 11 flights of to get a magazine, and you know. But with the change now, it's just fantastic, and it's something that maybe when you're on top of it as you were, is it easier to stay on top of it now because there are still changes coming? Just like the tide comes in.
I'm not on top of things like computer networking, and I implemented the first website for the library, but you know, I never got deep enough into really, you know, the coding or CSS style sheets and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. I do stay up with. I'm still a member of the American Library Association, and I still, you know, get library literature that I look through. But I'm not a practitioner anymore. Going back to a point that you were just saying, though, specifically for libraries and technologies and going to the stacks, they now have robotic systems in libraries, like in big college libraries,
yep.
where they will put their books into bins, and it's, you know, in the computer about where the bin is, and then they just have a little robotic arm that says, you know, go find this bin.
Unbelievable.
And often gets it and drags it back and puts it in the bin, and it goes up through this railroad track and goes and delivers it wherever.
Unbelievable.
It's really fun to watch.
I'm just shaking my head. My daughter is headed to Drexel University in a couple of weeks, and I know that they've got a big library, and I'm just picturing that. And you know what's funny? I was just thinking, you know, when I interview people, I always ask people, do you keep up with the literature? Man, that's something else when you ask a librarian that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Because there's two parts of it. Because,
yep.
of course, there's the technology and the business of libraries, and then there's the materials. And that's, of course, what's really mm-hmm. fun. So I get a lot of the magazines and stuff because I want to see what the new books are.
Of course, yeah. So you must be, yeah.
Get to see them before they're published.
So. Now, as a little personal question here, do you like e-books or you prefer the hard copy?
I actually do most of my reading now on my iPad with the Kindle app
mm-hmm.
because I don't have any more room in my house for books. And it was always, you know, if I was going on a trip, it was much more, what 20 books am I going to bring and how am I going to pack them? And I don't have to do that with, with the ebook. But I know a lot of librarians, still are kind of suspicious of that. And it's really a hard model for libraries, because how do you restrict the use?
Right.
Right? When you check out a book and then they bring it back, you know, they could share it while it's at home or whatever. But, they had to do a lot of thrashing around with the license for ebooks.
I can imagine.
They've gotten figured out now, but... that was a hard thing.
I love the idea of when you finish a book at night, if I'm reading in bed, then I can just I can go shopping and get a new one right there without ever having to turn my head off the pillow. It's pretty cool. Barbara, let me ask you... go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say that, though, every once in a while, it's like, okay, I'm going to put this down and get a real book, and that's actually what I'm doing now. I'm reading an old paperback copy of a Rex Stout mystery.
Okay. I have to do that, too. I have what I call my outside books that I don't want to, if I'm going out in the sunshine, I got to have a hard copy. So I get that. Now, let me ask you first of all, let me explain to our listeners what the big science picture, the big picture science show is. I'll get it out there. It is a radio show that is based at the SETI Institute out in California. And, of course, for those, the great unwashed, SETI is the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. And my interest in this came about many, many years ago when I first saw on one of the great teacher DVDs, I forget the magazine that you used to get, and you could buy these lectures. And I bought Seth Shostak's lectures. And I became enamored of how he taught. I read his books. And then during the course of teaching astronomy in high school, I had a question that I... actually emailed Dr. Shostak, and he actually emailed me back. So then I went to the SETI Institute online, became a member, and I'm just fascinated by this whole thing. And I actually got to meet Frank Drake a long time ago, for those who know Dr. Drake. I got to meet him back in the 90s. But how did you get involved in this?
Well, I have been interested in science, although I'm a humanities, major. And I have to admit, math is my absolutely worst subject in the world, which is one reason I didn't go into science. But I've been interested in all sorts of things, and science is one of them. So I'm one of the kind of librarians that's sort of a grazer. So I have a superficial interest in a whole ton of things, and then I go deeper into some other things. And science and astronomy and SETI is one of those things. And so when the Planetary Society started up, I became a charter member of that.
Me too.
And, they had their Project Serendip, which was a SETI project, and that was very interesting. And so I supported that. And the Planetary Society and the California Academy of Sciences in San Francisco did a seminar, or a panel discussion anyway, about finding ET. And Seth was one of the speakers, Doug Vakoch, who's now with METI, which is the Messaging of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and some other people were there. And it was just a lot of fun. And, Seth was a very compelling and very, very funny.
Yes, yes.
If your listeners haven't heard the show yet, Seth is a very, very intelligent and very witty and very funny guy. And so that was very fun and interesting. And I went because I was already interested in the subject. And then Seth actually was teaching a few classes at the Cal Academy. And so I took a couple of those. And then something that your listeners who may know about a little bit about SETI may not know is that the SETI Institute is not the one that does SETI at home. And I was under the misapprehension that it was, and I started emailing and talking with SAS and found out that they were two totally different things. Mm-hmm. SETI at home is UC Berkeley's project and not the SETI Institute's project. So that gets confusing a lot. And then, I offered to come start volunteering at the Institute, and that led them to, you know, hire me on as a full-time employee in the fundraising department, and I was doing that for some time, and then I moved, 2009, I moved into the grants department because the SETI Institute is not just looking for extraterrestrial intelligence, it's looking for life in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of our, you know, we have the SETI group is actually a very small group. There's not a lot of, you know, not more than maybe 20 people in the whole world who do SETI. But there's a much larger group, certainly, you know, 60 or 70 people at the SETI Institute that are scientists working on what's called astrobiology.
Right.
And that is looking for the conditions where life could exist, what kind of life might be out there, where could it live, are there microbes or other things in the oceans under the ice in Europa, was there anything ever alive on Mars, could there still be life on Mars, because they keep finding water and things like that. So most of our scientists actually work on astrobiology, and they get their money from NASA or the National Science Foundation. So they put in grants for projects that NASA and NSF want to fund. And I was the grants administrator who helped get their proposals submitted and then help them remind them to do their reports and things that they have to do annually back to the funder.
So, I didn't realize there was... I didn't realize there was another layer of that, with the actual just search for life, period. And, with the exobiology and the number of exoplanets that are being discovered daily reminds me of that I Love Lucy show where the conveyor belt was going on and she was popping the candies into her mouth. I mean, that's how fast these planets are coming along. But that is absolutely fascinating. And one thing that worried me all these years, I remember a long time ago back in the, I think it was the 80s or 90s, Senator William Proxmire gave the SETI Institute, or SETI in general, it might have been with the Planetary Society at the time, the fickle finger of fate, and said, "What a wasted enterprise that is." So I know you're not actively involved in the fundraising now, but is it going along fairly well? I hope.
It could be better. It could be better. So there's a couple of things. So one, yes, while most of our scientists are funded by, NASA grants, SETI is not funded by that. So the actual Looking for Intelligent Life is not funded by the government. So that's all private funding.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it sort of makes me a little annoyed because there is an exobiology program at NASA, and they restructured their programs a few years ago. And to this day, it says very specifically, we're not going to fund Looking for Intelligent Life with radio telescopes, specifically.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put in a grant that we will fund for doing that.
Right there in the language. That's amazing.
So that kind of irritates me.
Well, you think? Yeah. I mean, good grief. Lord have mercy.
So still no federal funding. So it's all privately funded. And you may have heard about the Breakthrough Listen initiative that Yuri Milner, the Russian millionaire, has put together. But the SETI Institute is not part of that initiative, unfortunately. So the money that he put up for that does not flow to the SETI Institute. It flows to other places like Berkeley and some of the, Parkes Telescope in Australia and some of those places. But the SETI Institute is not part of that. And even though we helped with information on that. So there's sort of a perception that there's funding coming to us that we actually are not getting. So it's still very important for, private individuals that are interested in this to come forward and help us out since we are a nonprofit.
Absolutely. We need a few more billionaires to chip in. My goodness. Well, and that finally, it brings me, Barbara, to the big picture science program, which is amazing in its own right. Now, how are you involved in that? Because you're not actually in California at the moment. So how are you involved with that?
Well, I did retire back about almost a year ago now But I still am on contract with the Institute, mostly for the radio show, but for some other projects that I work on for various departments at the Institute. And so what I'm mostly doing now is I'm a station contact, and I'm trying to do marketing for the show. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, talking to you about your station and, you know, seeing if you're interested in carrying our show and offering the... We offer, like, custom promotional advertisements you can put on your station and that sort of thing. That's what I kind of do now. What I was doing when I was in California is taking the audio that Seth and Molly and Gary produce and sending it out to our distributors for stations to acquire. So on the NPR satellite, since it mostly goes to public radio stations, mm-hmm. And a couple of other distributors also putting the podcast out on iTunes and out on our RSS feed so that anybody can download it and listen to the podcast. So that's kind of what I was doing back there, and now I'm Gary does that part now, and I do more of the, you know, station liaison and marketing from here, from Alabama.
I think it's amazing the way the whole thing is tied together, you know, through technology, the internet, and so on. And I think there are the best is still yet to come. So what's in the future now for you, Barbara?
Well, for me, enjoying being near the beach, and which I could never afford to do in California. And, you know, I enjoy continuing to work with the people that I work with at the Institute. In fact, we're having a little radio show staff meeting later this afternoon, so I'll get to talk to everybody. And, you know, just trying to enjoy life and promote the radio show.
Keep moving. I know. I love it. Well, I'm envious because you work with people that I've admired for so long, and I did get to meet a bunch of them when Project Beta was instituted in Massachusetts a few years ago. And anybody who has not listened to Seth Shostak, you just have to, whether you're interested in SETI or not. He gets cut off way too much in these television programs, and it irritates the hell out of me because they don't let him speak. But the Big Picture Science, it's right here, the Big Picture Science Show. We post it courtesy of the SETI Institute, and you've got to listen to that program, and certainly... you know, go visit the site, and those of you who got the money, become it's not expensive to become a member. You could always become a member, and it's just terrific. I can't say enough about it. Anything else, Barbara, you want to mention?
No. I mean, there's incredibly fascinating people at the SETI Institute. We have Mark Showalter, who has discovered more moons than Galileo. And has worked on the New Horizons project. Several of our people worked on New Horizons that visited Pluto and is continuing on. If you've heard of the Kepler Space Telescope that is looking for those extrasolar planets, most of the people working on the back end are SETI Institute employees, and a lot of those will be moving on to the new terrestrial planet finder, TESS, that's coming up very shortly. And then we've got Frank Drake, who's marvelous, and then the radio show staff. So fascinating place to have been, and a great place if anybody's interested in science to go visit.
Amen to that. And I can attest to, as I said, I met Frank Drake and a bunch of other founders of the Planetary Society, and from my point of view, these guys are absolute giants, but they're also real gentlemen and real people, so it's really cool. You got to visit the SETI. You got to visit SETI online, SETI Institute online. You got to do. I'll link to that. Barbara, I want. I will keep running the program as long as we're allowed to, and I hope that you'll from time to time keep me in the loop.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. I appreciate it, and I will talk to you later. In the meantime, make sure you wear your sunblock out there on the beach.
I will. Thank you.
Take care, Barbara. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That is Barbara Vance, who is the operations manager of the Big Picture Science Show at the SETI Institute. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.